If Moshe Rabbeinu had taught Parshas Matthes on YouTube in 2021, he might have gotten in trouble, and the first Aliyah might have gotten taken down. That's because the first Aliyah in Parshas Matthes talks all about women making vows. We learn in Maseches Nedarim, and we learn in Hilchos Nedarim, that the reason why people would take vows would be in order to make sure that they wouldn't engage in a certain behavior, which might necessarily be good for them, or in order to curtail a certain relationship. So let's say, for example, that you've been drinking too much wine, or you've been watching too much TV. So you would take a vow and say, from now on, I'm taking a neder that I'm not going to watch any more TV after 7 p.m. Or I'm taking a vow that I'm not drinking wine for another month, which would get into questions of the zeros, but we'll leave that aside. But the point being, vows were often taken to curtail a certain behavior which wasn't good for you, or alternatively, if you're having a fight with somebody, if you're annoyed with somebody, you would take a vow and promise that you wouldn't have anything to do with that person via the vow. So the way in which society was structured in the Midbar and in ancient Israel, this is where Moshe Rabbeinu would get in trouble, was that almost invariably, women were subject to the authority of their husband or their father. So Parshas Matthes begins in great detail discussing how it is and under what circumstances can a father annul his daughter's vows. Let's say a daughter took a vow that I hereby vow that I will not be involved in any of the family's child care. Or I hereby vow that I will not help in the kitchen, or I will not work in the family's field. So in such a context, the father would be allowed to annul the vow. And similarly, if a wife would make such vows, then her husband would be allowed to annul her vows. So while these halachas are technically enforced today, we have to wonder how many women are in fact making vows today and how many fathers and husbands are busy annulling their vows. But be that as it may, in a sicha in Parshas Matthes, which the Rebbe taught in the year 1956, which is printed in the Likutei Sichas, Chelek Beis, Hosafos, the Rebbe discusses the spiritual meaning, the spiritual symbolism of the father and husband nullifying the daughter's vows. In this year, we're going through the Yiddish text of the Sicha. Haytikin Shabbos, Zayn Matthes, Masi Mechubarn. This Shabbos, which happens to be the case also in 2021, and it's the case most of the time, Matthes and Masi, the two Parshias, are connected. In Parshas Matthes, Retzich Vegen Nedarim, when Vegen Oikir Zayin Neder, it talks about vows and it talks about uprooting vows. Vas in them Zayin Fran Dreifan, that there are three different modes of uprooting vows. Dure Hachochom Shal Oikir Zayin Lemafreya. One, and this is an option that anybody has, they can find a sage, a scholar, who retroactively uproots or annuls the vow. And the way in which that's usually done is that the chacham, the scholar, asks the person who made the vow, if you knew that the vow would hold you back from doing such and such in this circumstance, would you have in fact made the vow? And the person thinks about it and says, probably not. So thereby, the sage is able to show the vow was never really a sincere vow because the vow had not been fully thought through. But then if you're a woman, there are two ways in which your vows could be nullified against your will. One is derech an av, and derech a bal, through a father and through a husband. That they have the ability to nullify the vow from there and onward. In a bal gufa, zayin feran tzvei zmanim. There are two different periods, there are two different modes in which a husband can annul vows. Koydim hanisun. One is when the couple has entered a halachic state called erusin, which nowadays we do in complete conjunction to nisuin, but back in the day, what erusin was, is that the couple would commit to one another, but they wouldn't yet move in with one another. They wouldn't yet build a home together. Now it's somewhat analogous to what we have nowadays of engagement and marriage, but then what we consider engagement, which is a weaker commitment, then it was a much more serious commitment, and undoing the commitment would have required a bill of divorce. But nonetheless, these are two states of being a husband. One is the husband who's an arus, who is committed to the woman, but the husband and wife are not yet living in the same home. And the second is the more robust version of husband, which is the husband as the husband and wife are living in the same home. Beide haben dies chos von afaras nedarim. Both the arus and the full husband have the ability to nullify vows. Nor is that in the chalukah dinim tishna an arus and a baal. However, there are distinctions between an arus, this fellow who's in this sort of limbo state, and a baal, the full husband. L'chayra ad gedarft oiskomin as a baal at merkeich and zchus the an arus. We would think that since the husband has a fuller relationship with his wife, the full husband, they're fully married, living in the same home, that he'd be more empowered to nullify his wife's vows. And the arus, this fellow who's only committed to the woman, but they're not yet living in the same home, they're not yet fully married. For this vegan, gefen mir, idinafaris nidorim, as is da meila, in an arus if a baal. But nonetheless, we find that when it comes to nullifying vows, the arus has a virtue, he has an advantage over the husband. Their din is, as in baal mefer bekoidimin. A husband is not allowed to nullify prior vows. So let's say before the couple got married, this woman took a vow that every Shabbos she's going to get up at 6 a.m. and she's going to daven until 3 p.m. and she'll only begin to show up for the Shabbos meal at 3 p.m. So since that vow was made before the marriage, once the couple is fully married, the husband is not able to nullify that vow. Or let's imagine if a woman is very frum and she's very sad about the fact that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So she took upon herself that she'll only ever shower Erev Shabbos. She never showers or bathes at any other time of the week because she wants to respect the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. So once the couple's already married, the husband would not be able to nullify this vow. The vows which she made before marriage have no connection to the husband. The husband cannot undo them. Dakegin by an arus is their din, as an arus made for bekoidmin. But in contrast, an arus, this fellow who is committed to the woman, but they're not fully married, so that fellow would be allowed to nullify prior vows. L'chayra v'ikend azayin, as the arus will have been merkayach from them baal. This is very strange. How could it be the case that the arus, that the character who has less of a legal connection to his wife, has a stronger ability to nullify vows? So one explanation is, while an arus is dochnit made from the atzma, an arus is not nullifying vows in his own right, nor to zamimit them av, but rather he does the process of nullification together with the father. The naira hamurasa, because you have a naira, you have a young woman, and here there are technicalities, but any woman who gets engaged nowadays is not considered a naira, so this wouldn't really apply. But at least in principle, if you have a young woman who is engaged, or who's in this committed status of arusa, then both her arus, meaning the man who's committed to marry her, and her father together are permitted to nullify her vows. And the father doesn't have this limitation of not being allowed to nullify prior vows. So his power takes along the arus. As ich bayim is the talking agbolo mefer bekoidmin. So the arus too is not limited, and he too can nullify prior vows. Shenkin their baal, but this is not true when it comes to the husband. Thus is mefer b'fnei atzma, who is able to nullify in his own right. Vroom es is dach nisrik and reshus ha'av, because once the woman is fully married, the father no longer has any jurisdiction over her. On eres arzich amatzias. So the husband is an empowered entity in his own right, without any connection to the father. So b'meila hatazan agbalis. So therefore, since he's not able to rely on the father, he has certain limitations. Now this is all a very interesting discussion, and it'll get people who are concerned about gender theory and women's rights. They'll perhaps be very annoyed by this teaching from Parshas Matos. And Lumdish people who like the Maseches Nedarim will be very fascinated by all the details. But the question the Rebbe wants to address here is, what does this symbolically mean in our daily life? Because whether or not it's practical, which practically speaking, it doesn't really apply in the contemporary reality for various reasons. But nonetheless, what's the spiritual symbolism of this halacha? And this is part of the Rebbe's methodology. The Rebbe looks at every story in the Torah, and similarly every legal discussion in the Torah, and he asks, what does it symbolically teach us? So he says, there in fundam and avoda is, the meaning of this teaching in our spiritual work is, in avoda Hashem, zayin feran, svei efani avoda. When one serves Hashem, There are two different manners of worship. There are two different manners of work, of service. The Aveda von Erisin, work, spiritual service, in a manner of Erisin, which is a manner of commitment, but not yet complete intimacy and complete sharedness and togetherness. On the Aveda von Nisuin, the worship, the work of Nisuin, which means complete marriage, complete unity, complete togetherness, complete intimacy. Hagams der cholos managolus is nimshal eirsin. When lost loy daf given zayin der nisuin. Although it's the case that the golos in general, that the exilic state in general, which we're in now, is compared to eirsin, is compared merely to commitment and not complete intimacy. And the future to come, the messianic era, will be the time of complete intimacy and togetherness, full marriage. Abribiprotius is in Zmanagol's Gufa Oichvaran di Madrega von Erisin und di Madrega von Nisuin. But more specifically, within the exilic state itself, within Golos itself, there is the rank, there is a state of Erisin, and there is a state of Nisuin. Di Aveda von Erisin, the work, the worship of Erisin, is the Osir law Akule Alma. It's a commitment between the two parties. Meaning it's more negative than it is positive. It's committing not to be with anyone else. It's committing to this person. But it's not yet a state of togetherness. So translating this into spiritualized terms, Evert Abgerissen von Welt, a person rips themselves away from the world. Zayin avodah hitoyf im nitke poyol tazayfil. As was laveren in their madrega von dovak v'goymer, v'hoyu l'basar echad. A person has not yet reached the level of intimacy with Hashem, as it says that he will cleave to him and they'll become one flesh. That hasn't happened yet. A person has not achieved complete spiritual intimacy. Aber von Unionen von Welt ist er erased. But when it comes to worldly matters, when it comes to being stuck within the world, this person has left being stuck, being shackled by worldly matters. So that's Erisin. It's commitment without intimacy. The Aveda von Yisuin is v'hoyu l'basar echad. But the worship of marriage is uniting as one flesh. Eris givaren for einzik metelikos, and spiritually that means becoming one with divinity. Bizar is eris moilid b'doymelay, but thus is their tachas on Yisuin. And the state of intimacy leads to giving birth to someone who's similar to you, which that's the ultimate purpose of marriage. And in a spiritual sense, this corresponds to what Chazal tell us in Bereishis Rabbah, Maitol Oseim Shal Tzadikim, Maisim Toivim. What are the offspring? What do the righteous generate? What are the offspring of the righteous? Those are their good deeds. Thus haste, as Ermit Kol Asiyesov Zayin Lakalitz Velikos. A person who's in a state of intimacy with divinity is such that all their actions are a vessel for divinity. A kli versus bottle misached, so the minion versus kli. They become a vessel which is unified and nullified relative to that which is in the vessel. Hagam as mailas haved nisuin is a sach hecher. Vida haved of an erisin, although it's the case that the worship of marriage, that the state of being married is much higher than the state of merely committing. For this vegan is da mailan, there haved the erisin oif, there haved of an nisuin. Nonetheless, there's a virtue in the work of the commitment over the work of marriage. Erkin Meinin, as ibald eris shoyin suvi kumen, so there avayde fun yisuin, is a shoyin sadi gomer, on darf me nit onkumen sum ezer kodesh baruch, eris shoyin a bala mefer fun the atzmi, on darf nit onkumen sum av. A person might think that when they've, ironically, that when they've reached a level of spiritual intimacy, when they feel that they've become unified with Hashem, and they feel this in the way that they daven, they feel this in the way that they learn, they feel this in the way that they go about their daily life, that they reach a state of dveikus, that they reach a state of spiritual intimacy, they no longer need to rely on help from Hashem in order to deal with their inner negativity. They feel they can handle their challenges on their own. They might say, before I reach its lofty ranks in my davening, then I needed to ask Hashem to help me with my challenges in life. But now I'm able to overcome any spiritual challenges, and I'm just a conduit for the divine. So if a person says that, or their emes is, the truth is, as we says, if a person says things like that, Hotin bal givus, we immediately know, as das is nit bar kochva. This is not the son of the star. This is not a messianic individual. This is not a redeemed individual. As the prophet Bilam said in his prophecy, v'dorach, when he was speaking about Mashiach, v'dorach klichov miyakiv, a star shall shoot out of Jacob. And as the Rambam tells in Hilchos Melachim, as we know already from Chazal, that this is one of the first mentions of the Melech HaMashiach in Torah. But getting back to our point, so if somebody says that they no longer need to rely on their Father in heaven because they've reached such a degree of union with him, so such a person is not the son of a star. They're not a messianic individual, but rather they're a bar kaziva. They are a deceitful individual. They're fooling themselves and they're fooling others. Vazdas had zich gehandeld wegen am milcham begashmis, or mikol shekein wegen am milcham beruchnis. That such a person who says that given their connection with Hashem, they now no longer need to rely on him, they just channel him. So such a person can't be trusted to win a physical war. And certainly they can't be trusted to win a spiritual war. And thus is the ma'ilah for an aris. So that explains, spiritually speaking, the virtue of the aris, the virtue of this character who's merely committed, but not yet fully married. The avoided the erisin, the spiritual worship of commitment, if they're avoided nisun, over the worship, over the spiritual work of complete marriage. Hagam itzad atzma eris nidriker, although it's the case that the aris, the character who merely commits, is lower than the one who's fully married, of the mailin them is, his virtue is, the greater power derives from the fact, but there is mefir b'shutvasei da'av, that he's able to nullify vows in partnership with the father. Ergeit min ebirshin's koyach, he goes with the power of the one above. Umbishas ergeit mitn ebirshin's koyach, gehen erab ala zayn agbalus, und erken zukumen zu an ort, was mit seiner atzme welt er hindet gekent der langen. And at a time that one goes with divine power, they're able to reach places that they themselves would not be able to reach. Toyu, the world of chaos, is doch koidem letikun. It precedes the world of order. Was von Toyu, nem sich divar magashmi mit nietzerad, akt me tanise, mit adze sein eigenem koyach, ene mefer bekoidmen. Eder lang nitten Toyu, vemeilot er euch nitten koyach, if mevar sein die Sachen, welche nem sich von Toyu. This already requires a little bit of a more Kabbalistic background. So the Arizal taught that in the way the world evolved, the world began, or reality began, as reality began to evolve, reality first presented itself in a manner of boundless energy, and then when the boundless energy was too much to handle, reality reordered in an orderly fashion. But that said, these two forces of toyu, of the boundless, of chaotic energy, and tikkun, of bounded, grounded, orderly energy, both exist. Symbolically, femininity is usually associated with toyu, with the boundless, with the chaotic, and masculinity is often associated with tikkun. It's often associated with the orderly. So now what the Rebbe is setting up here is, we said that Baal, a husband, is eimei mefir the koidmen. He's not able to annul vows which happened before the marriage. So we said the chesaron, the problem, the deficiency of the husband, is that the husband is not working in conjunction with the father, and that's why the husband is not able to annul prior vows, because such a power only comes from the father. So that was true in the legal example of Nidarim. Now how does that apply in our spiritual analog? So spiritually, we said that Toyu is the world of chaos, of boundless energy. So physical things, the physical world, and the Yetzer Hara, all those things are generally associated with Olam HaToyu, with the world of chaos. Man, however, is associated with the world of Tikkun, with the world of order. But when man confronts the Yetzer Hara, when man confronts the evil inclination, when man confronts the physical world, man can easily be overcome by Toyu, by the world of chaos, because the world of chaos is more powerful than him. And furthermore, akta metanisei, ontologically speaking, the world of chaos precedes the world of order. So the only way that man, the Rebbe says, can overcome the world of chaos is not by relying on his own powers, but rather by working together with the Father, that is, his Father in heaven, by nullifying himself before his Father in heaven and asking his Father in heaven for help, is he able to confront and overcome the world of chaos which precedes him. Now, to read that point inside, through the act of nullifying together with the Father, that is the Father in heaven, that Hashem, that the one above, is not limited by ontological priority. He's not limited by the fact that fontoyu shekodem tikkun, by the boundless energy which precedes the orderly energy. So get koyach oich dem arus as the langen in toyu. So Hashem empowers this person who's in a state of in arus that he can enter the world of chaos. And he can overcome the evil inclination who's ontologically prior to man. Through Hashem helping him out, yocholoi, can man overcome the evil inclination. And this help from above allows man to elevate the sparks of chaos, which inhere in physical things. That also explains spiritually what it means to undo a vow. A vow is something which is restricted. A vow is something that you're not allowed to do. Undoing the vow means that you're now allowed to do it. So if you made a vow, say, that you can't eat pizza, now that you undid the vow, you'll now be allowed to eat pizza. Or if you made the vow that you won't be able to bathe, now that you undid the vow, you'll be able to bathe. So the Rebbe is saying that spiritually speaking, the act of undoing the vow means that very often when we confront the physical world, when we engage in physicality, physicality can overcome us. Sometimes when you eat the muffin drags you along with it instead of you elevating the muffin. Your life becomes about the muffin. Your life becomes about the music. And the music is not there to elevate your life, and the muffin is not there to elevate your life. Your life becomes about the job as opposed to the job being there to enhance your life and allow you to live the life that you want to lead. But hataras haneder, undoing the vow, means that first, you're not restricted, you're not held back from engaging in the activity, but two, is that you're able to engage in the activity and elevate the activity. The nekudas inyan is, the point of this whole teaching is, as vi huich min zol nitzayin, no matter how far you climb on your spiritual ladder, no matter how deep your experiences of mystical union that you have during davening and learning, that pervisin you must know, as with an eginim koyach can menit gain. By one's own power, one cannot go. You always need to bind yourself to a higher power. This indik you must know, as this is around the hecher and yonim, there are higher things, hecher and hecher, higher and higher. Vasudem is our nitzugakum, which you've not yet reached. Or in them is by yimnoch the ascholas haveda. And wherever you are, you've only begun the journey. And through connecting yourself to higher than where you are now, through connecting yourself to a higher power, this indik, as there is noch net fartik, you realize that you haven't yet reached the destination. Because there are higher and higher places that you need to go. And thereby, this arus, this person who is not yet in a state of complete union, goes along with the Father. As is found by him up alag baldus, that by him all the limitations go away, umefir bekoidman, and he is able even to annul earlier vows, or in the spiritual sense, he is able even to overcome those things which are more powerful than him, because he's connected to his Father in heaven. He's connected to the higher power.